Hello, everybody. Welcome to Masterclass, November 10th, 2022. I'm looking forward to hearing everybody and what you've got to present. It looked like, you know, we have it listed, so it looks like it's going to be a great bunch of presentations tonight, definitely. Everybody's ready and willing to listen. It's going to be a lot of fun. We have Frank Kianos, Jackson Nunn, and Lucien Olaroux. I hope I said everybody's names correctly. I have a big thing about that because mine's always said incorrectly. So I totally understand. So I try to do my best. Let's start with Frank. If Frank, are you ready?
I am. And you said all the right. Last name correctly.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yeah. So can everyone see my screen okay?
I see it.
Okay. Okay. So let me minimize this real quick. Okay. So welcome, everyone. My name is Frank. And for my masterclass presentation, I decided to go over a tool that many bug bounty hunters use as part of their hunt for bugs. By no means is it my intention to become a bug bounty hunter, but I came across this tool while I was strolling through my news feed, trying to stay up to date with current events, tools in the industry. This tool is widely used by red teamers as well to test the security of an organization's systems. So tonight's agenda will be mainly focused on the OWASP tool known as AMAS. We will touch base briefly on what OWASP is and what they are known for. And then we will dive into the contents of the tool and what it is used for. So the tool known as AMAS is a tool designed to perform network mapping of attack surfaces and external asset discovery using open source information gathering and active reconnaissance techniques. AMAS can discover unknown attack surfaces through DNS enumeration and network mapping. While conducting enumeration, one could use an IP address, domain name, company, or ASN number as part of the scope, which is pretty cool. So before we dive further into what the tool is, we're going to go over what OWASP is. OWASP is known as the Open Web Application Security Project. It is a nonprofit foundation that works to improve the security of software. From their website, it is a source for developers and technologists to secure the web through tools, resources, education, and training. Through community-led open source software projects, this is the place where all of that happens. OWASP provides free available articles, methodologies, documentation, tools, and other technologies in the field of web application security. So two of the resources that they provide for the community is the OWASP Top 10 Security Risks and OWASP Web Security Testing Guide. This is something that all cybersecurity professionals should be aware of. The Top 10 Security Risk List is a report of all incidents that happened in a given year across all industries and is ranked based on risks in any organization. It is a standard awareness document for developers and web application security. So as you see here, back from 2017, this is the list of the top 10 security risks that were identified. And obviously throughout the years, the list has changed. And going to 2021, the list has changed a little bit. Some risks have climbed the charts and there are some new ones as well. The Web Security Testing Guide is a comprehensive guide to testing the security of web applications and web services. So all of this is provided as part of OWASP's mission to improve the security of software. So now, time for the bulk of the presentation. So AMAS, as mentioned previously, is a tool that can discover unknown attack surfaces through DNS enumeration. It is like the Swift's army knife of bug bounty hunting. So this tool is made possible by Jeff Foley and Anthony Rhodes. So as you see here, AMAS is a tool that will run a collection of open source tools and run it as one, sort of like a Swiss Army knife. So there are different techniques that will pull from different data sources. So some of them include APIs such as 360 Passive DNS, Anubis DB, Buffer Over, Built With. It also does certificate grabbing from Census, Cert SH, Google CT, DNS lookup via brute forcing, reverse DNS sweeping, zone transfers, and much, much more. So this is all the techniques that it can provide, and this is all the sources that they actually pull from. So it is ran, the tool itself is ran through the terminal command line. It can be downloaded through various ways, but for time constraints, we're not going to dive into that. So the AMAS-help command will list the different ways that the tool can be used. So using the intel subcommand, it will discover targets for enumerations. When we use the enum command, it will perform enumerations and network mapping. If we run the vis command, it will visualize the enumeration results. That's actually my favorite part of this tool. The track will track the differences between enumerations, and DB will manipulate the AMAS graph database. So if anyone was interested in learning more about the tool, it actually provides documentation on GitHub. So these are great places to go to. So the first command that we're going to go over is the AMAS enum-list. So what this does is that it's going to list all the resources active that is currently configured with the tool. So additional resources can be utilized through the configuration file. So when you do a standard install of this tool, this is what, these are the resources that are available. So on the left here, you see the data sources. In the middle, it lists the types of tools that it is. And on the right, it tells you whether or not it's available. So this is just a screenshot of what you see from actually running the command. So for the presentation, we are going to use a target from a bug bounty website known as BugCrowd. BugCrowd is a crowdsourced security platform. It gives bug bounty hunters a platform to find exploits in companies' products and assets without any repercussions. So I went ahead and selected a company that everyone is familiar with, and that happens to be Netflix. So the image that you see on the right is a list of the assets that are in scope for a penetration test. We're not going to be conducting a penetration test, but however, we will be using the tool with this target. So the intel subcommand can help you discover additional root domain names associated with the organization that we are currently investigating. So when we run that with the whois command, it will list all the discovered domains that are run through the reverse whois. The dash V will output the status of the command line as it is being executed. So the image that you see here is what was executed, continues for a good bit. So I didn't get a chance to, you know, get a giant picture and try to fit it all on one page, but it will list all the sources on the left because of the dash SRC. It actually lists the domains that were discovered. And I included the IPv4. So what that will do is that will print out any IP addresses that were discovered as well. The enum command will perform DNS enumeration and network mapping while populating the selected graph database. So the enum-src-ipv4-brute-target, which is D. So it's going to print out the sources that we used. It's also going to print out the IP addresses for the domains. And it's actually going to, the brute will perform a brute force subdomain enumeration using a word list that is located inside the configuration file. So as you see here, we have different sources available, like from Pulse Drive, says that it's from ftl.netflix.com, and it'll actually print out, there's two IP addresses associated with that particular domain. So the amsvis command will create a network graph visualizations that add structure to the information that was gathered. So the D3 is short for data-driven documents. The command uses a JavaScript library to create a visualization of the data. So as we see here, red is the target domain or other domains that were discovered using the brute method mentioned earlier. The green dots represent the records that were discovered from open source methods. The orange indicates the IP addresses that were discovered, and pink are the net blocks. This is a range of consecutive IP addresses. An example of this would be like 196.25.0.0 to 196.25.255.255. And all the pink dots that connect to the blue dots indicate the ASN numbers that were also discovered. And what makes this command, actually what I love about it is that you can actually play along with the file. So this right here is just a recording of what a D3 force mat looks like in real time, because everything just moves when you're, just dragging it along. I don't know if you guys remember from growing up playing Mario 64 on the Nintendo 64. You play with this, you click and drag his nose, and you pull it, and next thing you know, it just flaps back into place. So it sort of reminds me of this. So I thought this was rather cool to play with. So the track subcommand will show the differences between enumerations that included the same targets for monitoring a target's attack surface. So what it will do is it's sort of like a history command. So what it will do is it'll list all the domains that were found, the IP addresses, and it'll tell you at which time the scans were actually executed. So in conclusion, OWASP AMAS has many uses for web application penetration testing for bug bounty hunters and red teamers alike. It is great to use many open source tools all in one, sort of like the Swiss Army knife of open source tools. So I know we touched base on OWASP and what kind of resources they provide for the community and the different ways AMAS can be helpful. The biggest takeaway from this tool is that it can discover unknown attack surfaces through DNS and DNS enumeration and network mapping. So I want to thank you all for your time and have a good rest of your night. So questions, I'm pretty sure we're going to save the questions for later. Is that right, Marjorie?
Correct.
Okay. And then,
thank you, Frank. That was awesome.
And references if anyone is interested.
Was great.
I gotta Hide everything. No, I'm just kidding.
Right. Awesome. Everybody's loving it. All right. Well, thank you so much, Frank.
My pleasure.
Let's go to Jackson. Are you ready?
Yep, I am. Just let me get it set up and then we'll be good to go. All right, so good evening, everybody. I'm doing my masterclass on troubleshooting. I feel like this is one of the things I do the most often, and I feel like it's really important. The only other thing there is to do is really to bypass problems, and I see that a lot of people do that instead of just troubleshooting and trying to find a solution and, you know, implementing that solution. So, today I'm going to kind of show you my method and then present a couple of scenarios, and hopefully you guys will help me out with those scenarios and we can kind of make this a team thing. So just the overview, I think troubleshooting is a vital step in the process of making something work, whether it's initially or whether it was working correctly at first and then it stopped working correctly. I feel like these techniques are versatile because once you learn the basis of them, you can use them on many different issues, right? If you have a network issue, you can use them. Or if you have an issue with your car, you can use them. So just by knowing the basics, you can use them in different areas. And then I just kind of wanted to use the word divergent. So I added that one. So I got this one off of CompTIA. This is kind of their basic troubleshooting. You'd first identify the problem. You'd establish a theory. You'd test that theory. You'd create a plan of action and a solution. You'd verify that that solution worked, and then you document it. But I think we can kind of make it more simple, but at the same time, bring it to the next level. So the first thing we have to do is identify the malfunction, because if we're troubleshooting, it means something's not working correctly. We need to get it working correctly. Without this step, you know, we really can't do anything else. The second step is to gather the data. The most important part here is asking questions. You know, how long has this been going on? Was there a system update before this happened? Is this the first time it's happened? Things like that is going to help you narrow down the problem and figure out a solution. So the next thing is, after you have all the data gathered, you feel like it's pretty good, you can start to look at the data. And also we can present the data. We can collaborate with other people and talk about the data we gathered and see if maybe they have information on it, because maybe it's something simple and they already have the fix for it. You know, we don't have to troubleshoot alone. I see a lot of people, I think they're kind of scared to ask questions. They don't want to look like they don't know things. So it stops them from asking questions and maybe fixing things quicker. The next step would be to brainstorm and implement a solution. Again, this can be, you know, with other people or with yourself after you've already had their input. And I think one of the most important things here is to take the easiest route first. Some people want to always go to the complicated, you know, solution, or they want to go right back to the beginning and restart. But you don't always have to do that. Sometimes there's, you know, just a small problem you can fix to get everything up and running again. The next step would be to determine and document the outcome. This is really important because this is how we know the solution that we brainstormed up was correct and it's working. And then it's important to document the outcome, because if it doesn't work and it causes more problems or something like that, we have something to go back to and something to look at and say, hey, this didn't work. Let's go ahead and try this now. And we can kind of go through these steps at different times. You know, we could brainstorm and it maybe our data was bad, so we have to go gather more data about the problem so we can fix it. You know, that's okay. So next up is going to be the scenarios. So I'm going to read these, and then if somebody wants to chime in, just raise your hand, unmute yourself, and So Specialist Smith went to go start his Humvee on motor pool Monday, but as he turned the ignition, he heard grinding, but the vehicle never turned on. The most knowledgeable mechanic determined it was the starter and agreed to replace it. Once replaced, Specialist Smith tried to start the vehicle, but still had no luck. So if we know that our solution should have worked, but it didn't, what's the next step we should take? So kind of looking back at the process and different steps, which one of these should we go through? April, what do you think?
I would say A, make sure that all of the components were properly installed.
Okay. What does someone else think about that?
I personally like D, just throw off the cliff. No.
Yep, that's always the solution we wish we could do, but we can't. So I would say, April, that's great. A, make sure all the components were properly installed. That's important, right? Because if they weren't, it doesn't function properly. But what about the easiest thing? What if we go to C, check the visible wires and see if they're connected correctly? Can we check that first? And then maybe we have to disassemble it a little bit to see if all the components were properly installed. And then we also have, yeah, Sean.
I go with E, lack of information. Is it still grinding or doing the same thing it was doing before?
So what would we need to do?
After the part being installed, is it performing new information? You know, we need more information at this point. What's it doing now?
So you're saying our data is not good and we should go gather more data?
Yeah. Correct.
Awesome. All right, let's move on to the next one. So an associate Jim at Chrysler was installing an airbag to a car, and in the middle of the process, the tool lost connection to the network. A supervisor came up and tried to reset the tool, but he could still not get the tool to respond. What's the next step he should take to get it up and running again? We have try to reset the tool again, third time's the charm. Throw the tool away and grab another one. The company can afford it. Check the wireless access points to make sure that the tool is connected, or replace the battery on the tool. Does anybody want to take a shot at this one?
I would kind of guess replace the battery on this one.
Yeah, that's a great idea. If it doesn't have enough juice, maybe that's what's making the connection difficult. So it can't connect to the network because it just doesn't have enough power to do so. So this is interesting because this was actually a scenario I ran into at Tesla. And beforehand, our tools are wireless and they work off wireless access points, and they were doing construction. So it ended up actually being the wireless access points, but that wasn't the first thing I checked because I didn't even expect that. I expected that if they were to do that, they would have let us know and stuff like that. So I started with, you know, D, I replaced the battery, tried to reset the tool again, but then it ended up being, I had to go further and look at the access points and see if they were all still up and good. So for scenario three, Mark was on his computer casually scrolling on YouTube looking for a video to watch. He noticed that his internet was slower than usual, which shouldn't have been the case because he just got a new router. He finally found a video to watch on the latest cybersecurity news when his browser redirected to a site he had never seen before. So it looks like his computer's compromised. How should we start getting his computer back into a good security posture? Anybody want to take a shot at this one? Are we sleeping out there? So if he just got the router, maybe he didn't change the broadcast ID and the password on the router, and that's how somebody got into it. Marjorie?
Yeah. So he's on YouTube. I would go on YouTube and find the answer. That's what I tell my students. That's what I always do. So, I mean, reset his router and IP address and see if it's happens again.
Perfect. Easy solution. You know, he could just unplug it, the Ethernet cable, reset it, get a new IP.
They always tell you to do it. Plug it, yeah. Unplug it, plug it back in.
Pick the easiest thing first. Because, and even if, you know, the broadcast ID wasn't changed, just changing it now, is that going to correct the problem? Whoever has access to his network, are they still going to, you know, be able to access it? And that's all I have for my presentation, guys. Thank you.
That was awesome. Definitely.
Thanks for describing the scientific method.
Right? There's always a way, but there's a simpler way, and that's the best way to do it, right? Now, I love it that you just gave everybody that, because I love the technical thinking part of it. Everybody must find their own solutions, and what's the best way to do it is start with the simple solution first, right? Keep it simple, stupid is what I heard a lot growing up, so I kind of live that way now. And I think that was perfect presentation to really show how that can be done.
Yes, thank you. I would very agree.
Much. Yeah, thank you very much, Jackson.
And you know, the first example, it was a solenoid.
He knew what it was. That's great. Yeah, see? And then there's always ask your friend who knows about cars. They can figure exactly. it out. Let them listen to it. Exactly, yeah. Awesome job. Okay, next we have Lucien. Love that name.
Hello, everyone. Yes, hello. My name is Lucien. Give me 1 second to see if I'm French, can share my screen.
Since I'm French, it's Lucien. Sorry. Italian, it's Lucien.
Do you guys hear me and see everything okay?
Yes.
So tonight I'm going to talk about the part of penetration testing, the red teaming that uses the physical penetration testing. It's, in my opinion, a part that sometimes it's overlooked. And I'm going to start by saying what the physical penetration testing is. It's the method that assesses all the physical security controls, which include locks, fences, security guards, cameras, or other security measures. And the test, the goal of test of physical penetration testing is to circumvent the safeguards, to access networks, locate sensitive data, and physically enter off-limit locations. Also, I want to talk a little bit about why is physical penetration testing important. It is important because it assesses the risk of an attacker physically breaking into your organization. And we know that usually businesses do an excellent job of protecting their networks and applications against a virtual cyber attack, but unfortunately, many do not consider the risk of a possibly physical attack on their locations. So, in researching, I found a couple of companies who offer these services, and this is what I discovered, like what mostly a pen tester who does physical penetration has in their tool. So they use lock picks, bypass tool, elevator master keys, common keys, and bomb keys. They have all kinds of wireless adapters, antennas, hardware, other tools, or miscellaneous tools. I'm not going to talk about the lock picking part. I'm going to talk about the hardware. That's the part that I found more interesting. And this is an example of what a toolkit of a pen tester, physical pen tester, looks. So it has all the keys that I mentioned before, and all the hardware and antennas. The first tool that I'm going to talk about, it's called the Proxmark 3. Well, this is a very unusual tool. It's able to read, write, clone, brute force, and emulate almost all the RFID's protocols. And according to the source that I found, it's the only one capable of transmitting and receiving at the same time. It is a small size device that fits usually in the hand or a pocket. It can run independently from a PC powered or an optional battery, which allows you to perform advanced actions such as online sniffing, key cracking, and offline encryption. It allows you to hack hotel rooms, car keys, public transportation system like buses, trams, museum tickets, e-wallets, loyalty cards, and many more. What I found that also interesting is that it's a great little device for physical pen testing, which allows you to capture, replay, and clone most of the RFID tags. This is an example. This is how the ProMax Pro Mark 3 looks. It's not cheap. It starts at $340, and this version that you see here, it doesn't include the Bluetooth connectivity and the battery, which you can attach and you make it completely wireless. The next slide, it's a short video. I hope you can guys see it. If not, let me know. It's about 4 minutes, is the longest that I added. I'm not trying to make you watch videos, but I think this is really interesting so you can see what this tool is capable of.
Should there be sound? Because I don't think we can hear anything. Is that correct, everyone else?
There's no sound?
No. Did you share with sound when you shared the screen?
That's a good question.
Yeah. Go ahead. Stop sharing.
Okay.
And go up to the top where you hit the share tray. There should be a toggle switch that says share computer sound.
Okay.
Yeah, in the drop down or in the.
That's it. Include computer sound. This one?
Yep. Okay. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I'm going to jump over again.
Welcome back to Hacker Warehouse TV. In today's TradeCraft tutorial, we will be using our Proxmark 3 RDV4 to decrypt and emulate a MIFARE 1K card using the Blue Shark module and RFID Tools Android app. The technique we will use to copy and emulate the target card is normally only possible with a wired connection to the Proxmark client on your computer workstation, but thanks to RRG, this can now be done wirelessly and discreetly in the field using just the PM3 and your Android device. To get started, you will need access to the following materials: 1 Proxmark 3 RDV4 with the Blue Shark module and the firmware fork supporting the RFID Tools app. 1 Android device with the RRG RFID Tools app installed. And 1 Target MIFARE Classic 1K card. We will be using an old hotel room key card. First, we are going to connect the Proxmark 3 with our Android smartphone by opening the RFID Tools app. Power on the PM3 and turn the Bluetooth module on by flipping the two dip switches on the right side of the Blue Shark module. Tap the Proxmark 3RD V4 in the app and look for it the list of Bluetooth devices. Once connected, open up the Red Team terminal to access the Proxmark client. Next, we will identify the target card by using the Easy Button menu and selecting HF Search. Note the UID value of the card for later use. We will need to identify at least one valid key from this card to decipher all of the key data, so check if the card is using any default keys by hitting the Easy Button starting with HFMF check to test for these known default keys. In our case, no valid keys were found. The default keys displayed are in sectors of the memory not used in authentication of the card. We will proceed by using the Easy Button to perform a dark side attack. This will attempt to exploit a vulnerability related to the parity bits used in reader card communication and, if successful, will decrypt a valid key for further decryption. Copy the valid key to your clipboard. Next, you will hit the Easy Button for performing a nested attack. This starts with HFMF nested. Tap this button and then use your keyboard input to delete the default values and then paste in your valid key followed by a space and the letter T. Hit send to execute the nested attack using the known key value. Once the client prints out the entire set of memory blocks, you no longer need to be in proximity of the target card. The target card data will now be loaded to the PM3 emulator memory. To emulate the target card using your PM3, all you need to do is input the command HFMFSIM followed by the letter U and the UID of the card. Tap send to execute this command and the Proxmark will now act as if it were the target card anytime it interacts with an RFID reader. This powerful attack technique is typically restricted to the lab. Thanks to the incredibly small form factor of the Proxmark 3RD V4, the battery and Bluetooth capabilities provided by the Blue Shark module, and the discrete interface provided by the RFID Tools app, this set of attacks can now be deployed in the field by a single red teamer. Remember that the unauthorized copying of proximity card data may be illegal in your jurisdiction, so please hack responsibly and ethically. Check out our other great articles on RFID and the PM3 and look forward to more Tradecraft tutorials demonstrating the power of this toolkit. Go to hackerwarehouse.com to purchase your own Proxmark 3RD V4 and the Blue Shark module, as well as many of the other accessories you will need to build your own RFID lab. Thanks again for watching and remember, keep it between the laws. Really. No lulls this time.
Okay. I hope you guys saw it and hear it. The next tool that I'm going to talk a little bit, it's the Flipper Zero. So this is the most wanted right now. So this tool, it's a portable multi-tool for pen testers, and the article that I found describes it as for geeks in a toy-like body. I'll show you the pictures in a little bit. It looks pretty much like a Tamagotchi, like the toys from the earlier 2000s. So Flipper Zero, it's a multi-tool that covers many of your hacking needs, and it's very importantly an open source. It can communicate to the sub 1 gigahertz devices. It can also communicate both on low and high frequency to NFC cards, infrared devices, and even Bluetooth. Also, Flipper Zero allows you to run bad USB attacks by connecting the device to a computer via USB and running a whole array of Ducky scripts. Flipper Zero has an app support from both iPhone and Android, and it also has a large online community that offers resources, and they come up with creative ways of using the device all the time. So this is the Flipper Zero. This is how it looks. It looks like a Tamagotchi. You can even play songs on it. There was a video of people being mischievous and using the Flipper Zero to open and close the charging ports of Tesla. Someone discovered there is a vulnerability they made public the code on GitHub. You can download it, run it on your Flipper, and then when you see a Tesla, you can try to open their charging port. The next tool that I'm going to talk about, it, this is my last tool, it's the Lanterl, which is a tool that provides stealth, remote access, network intelligence gathering, man-in-the-middle surveillance, and attack. Some of the features that the Lanterls have are you can use them for a persistent meta interpreter in Metasploit. You can scan the network using Nmap. You can use them for DNS spoofing, exfiltrate data. You can use them to capture browser traffic. You have access to the entire LAN network, and you can use a VPN to communicate with as an active gateway. Next, it's a short video presenting what the LAN turtle is. This is how it looks. It looks like a device, like they would translate from, you know, the USB to a LAN port, but it costs about $70. And this is the description that I found for it.
The LAN turtle is a covert tool for getting shells. Hidden inside this normal-looking USB Ethernet adapter is a chip that runs open-source Turtle modules. And these modules do everything from maintaining remote access to performing man-in-the-middle attacks and scanning networks. Setting up the LAN turtle is simple. The graphical shell guides you through the whole process. And the LAN turtle is set and forget, so once you've configured it to your liking, just drop it on a network and it'll run those modules. Since it's a smart USB Ethernet adapter, you can plug it in between a computer and an Ethernet cable as usual. And now, poised as a man in the middle, you can sniff up interesting network traffic or poison DNS, redirecting websites to the IP address of your choosing. And since it's USB powered, it can be dropped on the LAN with any regular USB charger or battery pack. Best of all, the LAN Turtle is completely customizable to your needs using the free open source Turtle modules. Need a persistent reverse shell on a network? Try AutoSSH. Want to integrate with Metasploit and pivot through the network? Well, use Meterpreter. Need to access every node on the LAN from wherever you are? OpenVPN will act as a site-to-site gateway, so whatever the LAN turtle can see, so can you from afar. The LAN turtle is great for penetration testers, systems administrators, and tech enthusiasts. And if you're looking for more modules, there's an entire download center to install more for free right from the LAN turtle. Learn more and get your LAN turtle now at LANturtle.com.
The last one, and I want to talk about it, it's, I remember one of my colleagues in one of the previous presentations were talking about the Raspberry Pi. So in researching tools, I discovered a tutorial made by a professional from the IT Pro TV on how you can create your own LAN turtle using a Raspberry Pi Zero, which is the level entry from Raspberry Pi. It's this version, it's about $10. So I'm just gonna list what you need and pretty much what step you have to take. I didn't attach the video because the video is about 15 minutes long, so I don't wanna go over. But anyone who's interested, I can post this on our chat and everyone can watch it. So the hardware needed, it's a Raspberry Pi. It's a micro adapter for Linux and the Raspberry Pi, and this thing is gonna need some power. You can use it, you can either hook it up at a computer and power it from there, or I can just add a battery. And as a software, what I found interesting, he uses an EC2 instance from WAS, which is going to use for a C2 server, and he installed the Kali AMI. Then he uses Termux, which is a terminal emulator for his phone, and then he uses a Kali instance for his laptop or computer, and then on all the instances, he uses ncat for as a shell connections. And this is basically the idea where you have the laptop, you have the server, you have the smartphone, you use the smartphone with the SSH to connect to the server, and you use the laptop with ncat to connect to the server, and the Raspberry Pi connects to the C2 server. And this is the things that he used. Right now, the Raspberry Pi Zero, you cannot find it. It's currently unavailable, but this set that you see in here was about $30-something, $35 or $36 at the time. All the tools put together, they were a bit over 50, so it's a bit cheaper than the buying the Lanterial. This is made, you made it. And these are all my references that I use, and thank you very much for bearing with me.
Great job. Great job.
Thank you.
I think those are all the presenters for tonight. So, guys, do you have any questions for any of our experts? Very quiet bunch tonight. Okay. Well, if no one has any other questions, any concerns?
I did see some of our newbies in here, so
yeah,
I'm glad they were able to make it and see what it's all about, because this will be you in a few or weeks or so.
Don't scare them.
Just a reminder. I know it was pretty awesome tonight, so kind of hard to top it each week, but.
Right.
This is why you can come each week and you can get ready yourself. But everybody thinks it's going to be hard, and look how great everybody did tonight. So, but thanks everyone. I thought it was interesting. Of course, I go for the simple stuff like the troubleshooting, because that was like really resonated with me. I help everybody get their Azure account working. If you've all been through that, I'm sure you have. If you had to get Visio at some point in your career here at Purdue Global, it was probably challenging. So that's what I do all day.
Yeah, I remember that when I was a student. And yeah, it was a challenge.
It's never, and no matter what, and it changes all the time. And we rewrite the instructions all the time. And it's still a problem. So
yeah,
it keeps us busy. But it's interesting when it happens, just exactly like what was being presented. It's like such an important skill for all IT, cyber, anybody, students to have. And you just have to have patience and just go through the steps and try that again. And you know, you can't get frustrated. I think that's the moral of the story, is you have to go back through the steps, try again. Everybody gets in eventually. That's what's cool about it. So, but great job, guys. Everybody did a great job.
Thank you. I just want to add that if anyone's interested, you can go on YouTube and just Google search Flipper Zero, because people are pretty mischievous and they're using it in all kind of instances. So they turn off the monitors who show up the prices at McDonald's, or they can even change the gas prices, but not at the pump, like on the display, the huge displays where they show you the gas prices. Using the Flipper Zero, you can actually go and change that. I don't know if it's legal or not, but people are doing it, so.
Pretty sure it would be legal. That sounds terrifying. That's why I stay off YouTube. There's too much scary stuff.
Yeah, people open garage doors and all kind of stuff.
Yes.
Doorbells, yes, for sure. And stuff like that.
That's scary. Very cool.
All right, everyone. Well, everyone have a great night. Thank you so much. And of course, if you have any questions, please reach out in chat, reach out to your lead.
That's what we're all here for. All right. Have a good night, everyone. Thank you all for coming.